Oh, hey, this is, I'm Tommy Wiseau from The Room, of course, and you are listening to the long and late movie show, American's Movie Podcast. So listen well, because the guy is good. Maybe he's good, but he's not, but you send him an email, okay? And by the way, see The Room. Okie dokie, bye.
Coming to you live from Madison Square Garden, this is the Long and Late Movie Show, America's Movie Podcast. I am Russell Hainline, a.k.a. Frank Longo, and I am joined as always by my partner in crime, Mr. Leighton Gordon. Good evening, Leighton.
Good evening, Russell. It feels great to be the second best thing coming out of Madison Square Garden today.
What is the first best thing coming
out? The New York Knicks, I tell you. They're fantastic.
For now, yeah.
Did you see the way they beat up Miami? They came back on Denver last night. It's great.
Well, I mean, to be fair, you know, coming back on Miami right after they lost to the Wizards, you know, it's not a, you know, the regular season doesn't mean a whole lot.
We didn't have Carmelo either. 8-0 at home, 15-5. We're doing great. It just feels good to be proud of the Knicks. It's a rare thing.
You're just deflecting because of the New York Jets.
Well, they did beat up Jacksonville's own Jaguars.
Yes, my Jacksonville Jaguars. Yes. You've tuned into the Long and Late Sports Show. You can reach the Long and Late Movie Show on Twitter, twitter.com/LLMovieShow. We are on iTunes, the Long and Late Movie Show. We are on Tumblr, longandlatemovieshow.tumblr.com. We are on Stitcher Radio, Long and Late Movie Show. You guys may notice that we do not have Shira this week. Shira is starting a new job, and she has training all week that apparently goes all day and all night. We bent over backwards trying to get her onto the show. She is woeful. She is despondent that she cannot be here today, but we wish her well. And I sent out on Twitter, I said, if anybody has any messages for Shira, we'll read them on the show. And Flound of Pesh, at Flound of Pesh, my buddy Tyler, who may end my fantasy football season tonight. he says, Shira, you're the best butt plugger on the show, or at least I assume that you are. So that's a sweet message from Tyler to Shira. Shira will, I hope you enjoy that. So we don't have anybody else. It's just you and me, buddy, like old times.
Like old times.
Old times. All right, let's go ahead and get started. Let me start with one thing that just I saw. I saw the comedy. Are you familiar with the comedy?
That's the movie with the Tim and Eric guy?
Yes, with Tim and Eric, both guys. They're both
Okay.
It's about a guy who lives in he is a bored, wealthy young man, youngish. He's in his mid-30s in Williamsburg. Who has nothing better to do than to go and be an asshole to a bunch of people, including his friends and family, which he doesn't do out of any sort of sheer malice. He does because he's bored and because everything he does is cloaked in irony, and so he has no other idea of how to communicate with people. And that's a really interesting idea, and there are a couple of scenes that get really, really dark, and I actually thought the darker the movie got, the more interesting it got. But, and by dark, I mean complex, because my main problem with the movie is for the first hour or so, it's mostly this guy just being a dick and, you know, making Nazi jokes, making jokes where he's like a slave master, doing like a slave master voice, you know, going into like the black club and, you know, saying to them, like, let's go get some hoes, you know, just... Doing just anything that is moderately shocking just for the sake of being shocking. I don't think the movie's not trying to be funny. I don't think that the movie approves of the main character's actions. I don't think that the movie thinks he's actually funny. I think that they think this kind of behavior is extremely sad and unnerving, and that maybe there is some humor in it being sad and unnerving. But it's a drama first and foremost, and they've committed to it, but I can't watch what is essentially the emotional equivalent of torture porn for, you know, 90 minutes straight I give it 2 kernels.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Who else is in this? Anyone else known in this?
No, just Tim and Eric. Neil Hamburger, who is associated with them. He's not playing Neil Hamburger in it. He's out of his sort of stand-up comedy persona, just being a guy. I think there was one other name that I recognized. James Murphy, he's a guy that I've seen him before. But yeah, no, it's low budget, and there's just no narrative. It's just a character study. That's the other thing. Maybe this movie would have been a little more palatable had the characters had any sort of forward momentum, but I guess the point of the movie is that these people have no forward momentum in their lives. So I don't know. It's maybe just not a terribly cinematic idea. I admired what they're going for. A couple of scenes work, but most of it for me is just sort of excruciating and not fun. So
that's sad.
Yeah. So that's the comedy for you.
So did you like their previous movie from earlier this year, the billion dollar movie? Right.
I did not like that. I kind of liked this more than the $1 billion movie. I do like their show. Tim and Eric, awesome show, great job. I think is pretty hilarious. But that show is like in 15-minute increments. And usually they do a lot more playing off of sort of the TV and movie genres on their TV show than I thought they did in the movie. I thought when they were like parodying movie stuff in the movie, it was great. But there seemed to be a lot more like diarrhea and like oozing pus and, you know, just sort of stuff that, again, is meant to be this sort of anti-comedy gross weirdness for the sake of being gross and weird.
So this could be a case of maybe, the limits of TV working for you rather than, being
right.
Bad for you.
Yes. With that style of comedy, 15 minutes of it is totally palatable. 90 minutes consecutive with, sort of a strung along narrative. Maybe I would have liked it more if it had no narrative, but they tried for a narrative. I don't know. It didn't work for me. I know my buddy Matt Tice, who's been on the show, who may be listening right now, he likes it a lot. So some Tim and Eric fans really enjoyed it. I did not. I liked this a little bit more, but it's probably harder to watch, frankly, because it's a drama. It's depressing. So yeah, that's the comedy. But on the flip side, you and I both saw a very good movie this week, Middle of Nowhere.
I think you can even say that this is a pretty great movie. I was on the verge of misting up from the very first scene. I don't know, something about once the movie got started for me really worked. I think the story of the movie of a young woman who kind of gives up on a medical career to be a stable home to her boyfriend who is in jail for an 8-year term. Nothing about that on paper relates to me, other than it's all black characters. But it was really, really hitting me because you get the sense that the main character, Ruby, knows that she's made that this decision that she's made is kind of a foolish decision. She's too ashamed to even admit, to talk to her mom about it, to talk to her family about this decision, she's made. So she kind of, whenever they confront her with it, she kind of clams up. And I can definitely relate to that situation a lot. And I think the acting here was also just really, really fantastic by, and I'm going to struggle on this name.
Say it.
Ime Yatzi Kurinial D. Actually, that's actually a lot harder than Kuvenzali Wallace or whatever.
Kuvenzhané Wallace, and I would at least take a guess that it's Ime Yatzi Kurinial D.
By the way, I don't know where she's been, but she is absolutely one of the she's absolutely beautiful. She's actually beautiful on screen. Every time I see her, I need to see her in more movies because she delivers a really great performance here. That could have been screechy, but or overacted very easily. It kind of reminds me of that movie from last year called Pariah, which I was not too big a fan of. But, you know, but she managed to keep it together and deliver the right performance, the right kind of understated, heartbroken performance that I just really, really enjoyed. There's only one thing I would say is a negative to this movie, and it's kind of a personal preference, is I'm not a big fan of poems, and this movie ends in a kind of a long and kind of annoying poem, and just really, really kind of dragged for me. I kind of got, you know, there's like a scene where that wraps up the movie, and then they go into a poem, and I felt that they should have ended the scene in before the poem. And that's the only thing that I can say is any negative to this movie. Just the performances are just really great, and the story is just really delivered great. I could see some writing nominations, some acting nominations, and possibly a nice supporting actress nomination here also.
For who?
For Lorraine Toussaint.
Yeah, I think it's Toussaint. I think there's an A in there somewhere.
Okay.
There's kind of like a French sort of I don't know. The name reads to me sort of like a New Orleans Cajun French kind of name. Although I've never said it, so what do I know? Yeah, I mean, I agree. Obviously, I have even less in common with these characters. I can't even. You were like, I can't relate to them at all, except that they're black. I can't even relate to them on that level. But
you're both in California.
We are both in California. That's true. But I will say the same thing. I related very, very closely to Ruby and sort of to the conflicts that multiple characters were having. It's one of those examples of the more specific your movie is, the more universal the themes become. Like, it's easier for me to get emotional in a scene in something like Holy Motors, where it's so bizarre and weird but incredibly specific, than it is to something that's like trying to play to, you know, the lowest common denominator, you know, to everybody. This movie tells a very specific story, and it tells it very, very well. I agree, Corinne Aldi, who I think this might be her first. I didn't look at her IMDb credits, but I think this has got to be her first like big thing, ish. I mean, big in the sense that people watch it, because I think it was made for under $500,000.
TV series.
Yeah, I mean, and, so this is her first feature. I mean, that's awesome. She's really, really great in it. Really, really beautiful. She draws your attention. The mother is outstanding. She's another character that I really related to. The idea of, you know, how do you maintain that relationship once children have left? You know, like, in mistakes that you made, do your kids hold them against you? Mm-hmm. How do you endear yourself? How do you, like, tie the family back together? Like, now, my mom's like a saint, and she didn't do anything wrong at all. But, you know, when I think about the idea of having children and the idea of being so scared to be a parent because you'll mess up, and then it ends up with your family like that, where nobody ever talks to one another anymore. Like that, mm-hmm. I just feel like that's everybody's fear. Like anybody who might want to start a family or who has started a family.
And, you know, it's really not that she's like a bad mother. It's just that she
not
had to, you know, she had, as a single mother, she had to kind of risk developing any personal relationship with her children in order to take care of them health-wise and, you know, school-wise and all that stuff. And so that, and now that the children are grown and the children don't need her to be, you know, for sustenance anymore, she can't relate to them and they can't relate to her. It's a real tough thing.
And I actually thought she was kind of hilarious too. Like, absolutely, my mom or more my grandma does this. The like, oh, so you know, you're too good to call your mom anymore. You know, like that whole guilt trip thing that parents and grandparents do.
My mom does that twice a week.
Yeah, I was howling. And, you know, and then she, in that one dinner table scene, which was, in my opinion, the most powerful scene in the movie, you know, she's acting funny, and then it just builds and it gets serious, you know, at the drop of a hat. I was really, really gut-punched by that scene. David Oyelowo is great. Omari Hardwick as the husband is great. The sister, I don't know who the name of her sister is. How rare is it that you have a movie with three really fleshed out female characters? I mean, not to mention three really fleshed out African-American female characters, you know, written and directed by an African-American woman. I just thought this movie was terrific. I really, really loved it. I thought it was...
I don't know anything about the writer-director, Ava DuVernay, but I'm definitely interested to see what she will be doing next.
And the movie looked great. For a movie that was filmed for under $500,000, I mean, this
no
movie...
No way.
This movie looks terrific. Yeah, the Spirit Awards... is it the Spirit Awards? Maybe... No, it's not the Spirit Awards. It's something. There's an award body that gives out... maybe it is the Spirit Awards. They gives
Independent Spirit Awards? Or whatever.
Yeah, or something. Where they have a category where it's the five best movies that were made for under $500,000. And Middle of Nowhere is nominated in that category.
Oh.
So, yeah.
It shows that you can make a quality independent movie for really cheap. Now, this is really great for the film industry and for black filmmaking. I really want to see what the next level of black filmmaking can be.
Well, and I mean, how many black female filmmakers can you name?
I can't name any, really.
Okay, I mean, that's what I think is great. You know, let's maybe try and give black female filmmakers more than $500,000 and see what they do. You know what I mean? There's such a rich possibility here. I mean, you would see on the surface if I told my friends. This is a movie about a young black woman whose husband is locked up, and she lives in South Central Los Angeles, and she's trying to get by the struggle. You know, that paints a picture of a different kind of movie than what this is.
Yeah.
It paints a picture of, you know, like a hood movie, you know, like a Boys in the Hood, you know, where like drugs come into play, or, you know, there's a prostitution, or, you know, like some, all the tip guns, you know, all the very prototypical things that you see in these kinds of movies, quote unquote, are really generally absent here.
Yeah.
And just the complexity of the characters. And this movie is sexy too. I mean, it's a romantic, a deeply romantic and deeply sexy movie in a couple of places. The relationship between David Oyelowo and Emeyazi Corneyaldi. I just wanted to show off that I could say those names okay. It's great. Their chemistry is fantastic. So, Leighton, how many kernels are you giving Middle of Nowhere?
I'm giving this, out of four kernels, I'm giving this 3.5. I'm going to give this 3.5.
Yeah, I'm leaning on 3.5. I might push it to 4 later. I agree that the ending is a little on the nose, and some of the music was a little on the nose, too. Like, you can kind of hear in the lyrics, you know, them singing about, the same thing that's going on with the character or whatever, which is a little annoying.
Yeah.
But, so, I mean,
but,
that
if you can find this out, in New York, it's playing at the IFC Center. It's the only place it's playing at. So if you go to, in New York City, go to the IFC Center on 6th Avenue and West 3rd Street, you can find it there.
Yeah, and it was playing in L.A. just last week. They sort of I guess it had played earlier, like in the fall, and then it left, but they brought it back in hopes of getting sort of some award contention. I was going to try and see if I could figure out where Middle of Nowhere might be in L.A. right now. This is compelling podcast listening here. Let's listen to the host search on the Fandango app for a film for one city where listeners might be. We should really look up where it is in New Zealand for our New Zealand listeners.
I think that this is going to probably show up on the IFC channel or IFC On Demand very soon. So if you pay attention to IFC On Demand or IFC in general, because this is related to... This is an IFC production, I believe.
Yeah, video on
so
demand.
Just check IFC to see if you can.
A lot of those indie movies do end up getting onto iTunes pretty quickly, or you know, Amazon Prime, stuff like this. So yeah, definitely check this one out. I don't really know whether it's going to realistically get any Oscar love.
Oh no, it's not.
But
it's playing in one theater in Manhattan. And I don't see that expanding anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's possible, maybe. You know, in something like original screenplay, you know, but acting categories, although I'd love to see the acting categories happen, I'm just not convinced. Well, let's go ahead and talk about the Oscars some. We were going to do some Oscar talk this week because critics groups are starting to announce who their winners for the year are. And generally speaking, these early critics groups end up sort of shaping the direction of the race, giving some people some momentum, zapping away the momentum of other films, other performances. So the big three that have been announced so far are the New York Film Critics Circle, the National Board of Review, and the Los Angeles Film Critics. Leighton, you've got the lists, correct?
Okay, so let's start with, what do you want to start with? Best Picture?
We can go ahead and start with Best Picture, why not?
All right, so Best Picture. New York Film Critics are saying Zero Dark Thirty. The National Board of Review is saying Zero Dark Thirty. And the LA Film Critics are saying Amour, the old people, as you were described it, what is it, old people falling in love or something like that?
No, old people dying slowly.
Old people dying slowly. So I can't even speak to any of these because none of these are officially out yet. But from the love that Zero Dark Thirty is getting from multiple sources, I'm very interested to see it.
Well, you have to consider it the favorite at this point. That doesn't necessarily mean it'll be the favorite when Oscar voting happens because it's all about momentum. I mean, I think when we talked about it before, Argo seemed like sort of the clear leader. But, you know, almost always the movie that is in front early on ends up sort of fading. I mean, something would have to happen. Some critic group would have to really, really support Argo to put it back into the race. The race to win. I still think it'll get a nomination, obviously.
What about Lincoln?
I think Lincoln is absolutely in it. I would say that Zero Dark Thirty versus Lincoln seems to be the race at this point. You could make an argument that Argo is still lingering. I personally would say you could make an argument that Les Miserables, the musical, for those of you not in the know, even though some reviews have been kind of roasting it, I feel like it's the type of thing that really could play to a wide audience, to an Academy audience. It's got a big cast. You know, the actors are the biggest branch of the Academy, and so if you have a lot of acting in it, and this movie will have acting with a capital A.
She cuts her hair in the movie.
Right.
It's dramatic.
So I think that those four are probably the main contenders, quote-unquote. And Amour
like a – it's a French movie also, right?
It's Austrian. It's the Austrian submission. Haneke was the director, but it is French language. It is an Austrian movie that is French language. I'm not going to say that it doesn't get a Best Picture nomination. I feel like it's more likely that it would get like a Best Director nomination. You know, that he would file into that category, but clearly a lot of people are really, really passionate about it. So it could still slip in there.
All right, so up next, Best Director. And again, it's pretty much Zero Dark Thirty wrapping it up, but we got New York Film Critics going Kathryn Bigelow, National Board of Review also Kathryn Bigelow, and LA Film Critics going with Paul Thomas Anderson for The Master. Which is kind of forgotten for me, but I think it is a pretty well directed movie, so I can understand that getting a nod, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, Bigelow again. You got to consider her the favorite at this point. Although Spielberg, don't count out Spielberg. Critics, I think, just tend to hate to vote for Spielberg. You know, because it feels like the critics want to sort of they want to support somebody that like needs support. So it's never likely that they're going to pick the movie that is sort of the front runner in terms of name recognition. You know, historical period piece, Abe Lincoln, Daniel Day-Lewis, Steven Spielberg. So that's why I think Spielberg isn't getting any love here, but he's definitely in the thick of it. Bigelow was even the runner-up for the L.A. Film Critics, so everybody's in love with her at this moment. Paul Thomas Anderson, that's a good win for The Master, and we can talk more about The Master as we go, but it needed a boost because it kind of got shut out entirely from the Board of Review and from the New York Film Critics, and then the AFI people who just named their top 10 movies today left The Master out of it entirely. So you're definitely seeing
It's really fallen out of favor. I wonder if releasing later in the year would have worked better for it.
I mean, I think that regardless, I think people have seen it. I think that just a lot of people think it's too weird, too cold, too removed. I don't know. Anything else about Best Director that you want to talk about?
Nothing else. Nothing else really. Did you think anything else? Was there anybody else that you felt should have been maybe nominated or something? Or at least considered or won?
I think that I'm surprised that Silver Linings Playbook hasn't done more. I mean, I don't think you liked it. I did not like it.
I did not see it based on your recommendation.
I mean, I should take it back that I didn't like it. I thought it was fine, but the buzz I hear is very strong. I would love to see Beasts of the Southern Wild get an even bigger boost than it's been getting, just to give it even more. Like, it's winning all the things like best first feature and stuff like this. Actually, it didn't win that, I think, from the New York Film Critics. They gave that to How to Survive a Plague. I just think that it could use a boost to really, really give Kevenchen A. Wallace a chance, to really give Dwight Henry, who we'll talk about in a second, a chance to be nominated. I wanted to see more love for that. Obviously, I want to see love for like the things that are really off the beaten path, things like Holy Motors, things like Perks of Being a Wallflower. Even giving Moonrise Kingdom some love would make for a much better case for Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
So, but no, I mean, again, Zero Dark Thirty, Lincoln, Argo, L.A. loves Paul Thomas Anderson, so that's not terribly surprising.
So for the actor categories, we got New York Film Critics are going Daniel Day-Lewis. National Board of Review are going Bradley Cooper for Silver Linings Playbook. And LA Film Critics are going Joaquin Phoenix for The Master. I guess they like The Master a lot. This split is interesting. I don't know what to take of it. The Bradley Cooper nomination that seems to be the one that is most curious to me. I think Daniel Day-Lewis is pretty much... I know that he's not going to win, probably not going to win like a third Oscar, but you can maybe, this is a really Oscar caliber performance. So, I mean, like, I can totally understand what's going on there. And then Joaquin Phoenix, it's such an interesting performance. I need to see that movie one more time just to, rethink on what I think about his performance in the movie. Because I actually think that he's worthy of a nomination in any other year. I just don't know if this year is the year.
Well, if you don't think Daniel Day-Lewis is going to win and you don't think Joaquin Phoenix is going to win, who do you think is going to win?
You know, I'm actually not sure. I'd have to see like a good list. I don't know. I think Daniel Day-Lewis should probably win, but I don't know if he will win.
I think it's Daniel Day-Lewis is to lose.
You really think he's going to get a third Oscar?
I really do. I mean, it'd be surprising if he didn't at this point. I mean, maybe if the critics really bolster Joaquin, I mean, it also looks like the Sessions, unless the Sessions gets revived, the Sessions looks kind of dead in terms of Oscar heat, as it were. Daniel Day-Lewis is the front runner, man, and he gives the best performance in the category. I mean, I really liked that Denis Levant of Holy Motors, Denis Levant, he was the runner-up in L.A., and anecdotally, he was the runner-up in New York. I really wish he would have gotten a win to give him even a prayer of a chance of sneaking in. But that's obviously not going to happen. So I need to stop hoping
it's
for
like
it.
12, he was in like 12 performances, 12 separate different performances that were all
hey,
really
that's,
great.
So. Yeah, that's more than anybody else did this year. Yeah, I mean, I think this is Daniel Day-Lewis versus Joaquin Phoenix. Maybe Hugh Jackman, but again, like, we're not going to see Hugh Jackman win any awards. Bradley Cooper, I mean, he was very good in the movie. I kind of wonder, with National Board of Review, considering they gave the award to Bradley Cooper and Jessica Chastain and Leonardo DiCaprio, not to be, like, play spoilers for ahead, part of me thinks that to some degree they want these people at their party. You know what I mean? Like Daniel
Day-Lewis... You make it seem like the Golden Globes.
Daniel Day-Lewis wouldn't be as much fun at a party, and Joaquin Phoenix definitely wouldn't be fun at a party. You know, I'm not going to say that that is the only reason. They probably also thought that Silver Linings Playbook deserved to win something, and so let's give it to this because they thought it was the most worthy performance. And again, like, why reward Daniel Day-Lewis? He doesn't need the help. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's Day-Lewis versus Phoenix. Really, I think John Hawks needs to win something if he wants to even stay in it at this point. He might be in danger.
All right. Best actress. We got Rachel Weisz for The Deep Blue Sea. Jessica Chastain Rachel Weisz won from the New York Film Critics. Jessica Chastain won the National Board of Review for Zero Dark Thirty. And Jennifer Lawrence and Emmanuel Riva they split for the LA Film Critics. Russell?
They tied.
So Emmanuel Riva from Amour and Jennifer Lawrence from Silver Linings Playbook, they split. That's interesting. I have not seen any of these movies, so I cannot even really talk. I don't even really know much about the Rachel Weisz movie, Deep Blue Sea. Do you know anything about this movie?
I mean, I think it's one of those. My understanding is that it's a little like historical period drama, where she's sort of a put upon woman, and Tom Hiddleston is her controlling husband or boyfriend, something like this. I don't really know, quite frankly. I really don't know whether she's going to get into the category. It looks like Chastain is in. It looks like Lawrence is in.
Kuvenzhané Wallace. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I don't know where you're getting that L at the end. It's not in her name. I would think that she would be in. I would hope that she's in. Then you've got, I mean, Emmanuel Riva. You've got Marion Cotillard for Rust and Bone. They both, I mean, will two foreign language nominations get in? I don't know.
Well, you think Emmanuel Riva is a Sherlock, then, right?
I mean, I don't know. It's tough. Old French people are tough to get in to, like, Oscar categories because they're probably not going to be very good interviews, because they don't speak much English, and they're old, so they don't want to be, like, flying around all these junkets everywhere. They don't want to be flying to all the parties, because they're old. So,
Marion Cotillard won, you know. She was in a French movie.
Yeah, but she speaks perfect English, pretty much. And also, she's young and charming and beautiful.
Gorgeous, yes.
Right, so she's an easier person to vote for. I don't know. Who else did I say was a good likely candidate for Best Actress?
Anything from Les Mis?
For lead? I don't think so. I don't know. It's a tough. It's always somewhat of a tough call with actress and supporting actress. I mean, if Emiyazi Corinialdi could sneak her way in, that would be just utterly fantastic. Yeah, I mean, Chastain, Lawrence, Wallace, I think they're the three main contenders. The two French women, Naomi Watts in The Impossible, Keira Knightley and Anna Karenina, maybe. Judy Dench, the best exotic Marigold Hotel. That's sort of old people catnip, you know. They love that kind of shit.
Let me ask you a question. Let's just jump back a second.
Sure.
Into Best Actor. What do you think about Liam Neeson possibly winning something?
There's no chance. Okay. I mean, like, he would have to win more than one Critics Award to get even close to the Academy. I mean, you're looking at a category right now with Daniel Day-Lewis, Hugh Jackman, Bradley Cooper, Joaquin Phoenix, Denzel Washington, John Hawkes. I mean, that's six right there. And John Hawkes, considering that John Hawkes doesn't have, like, sort of the star power of the other five, you know, he may fall by the wayside. So that's six names right there. I don't know what Liam could possibly bring to the table there.
Okay.
Sadly, I really liked that movie and I liked his performance, but I think that's a stretch.
Okay. If we can go to Best Supporting Actor, so Matthew McConaughey wins, but what did he win for?
He won for Bernie and Magic Mike. You can win for multiple. So, like, I think Jessica Chastain won the year before for, like, The Help and Tree of Life and all the other shit that she was in last year.
Okay. You could also nominate him for Killer Joe. He has fantastic scenes in Killer Joe.
But they didn't.
We got DiCaprio. So I assume this is DiCaprio in Django Unchained. Is it?
Yes, yes.
Okay. And we've got Dwight Henry from Beasts of the Southern Wild. I got to go with the LA film critics here. I think that's the best performance of the year. I'm interested to see why DiCaprio won here. I haven't heard much Oscar buzz out of Django, so I did not know that was an Oscar-worthy performance. But it's supporting acting, so there's, a lower standard that's necessary to win there.
I mean, I think DiCaprio and Samuel L. Jackson, I've heard both of their names mentioned in terms of Oscar nomination. I don't know that Matthew McConaughey is going to happen for the actual Oscars. I'd be pretty surprised. I mean, I still maintain that Tommy Lee Jones is going to win this category. So even though he hasn't won anything yet, I'd be surprised if he lost come the Oscars. Philip Seymour Hoffman hasn't won anything yet, but he'll be in there. Robert De Niro hasn't won anything yet. I actually think if anybody big could slide through the cracks, it might be Robert De Niro, especially because Silver Linings Playbook needs a big win to sort of get some momentum back. DiCaprio, yeah. I would love to see Dwight Henry in that field. I think he deserves it wholeheartedly.
You don't think he's going to get a feel-good nomination, right? I mean, come on. They're going to want to recognize Beasts of the Southern Wild for something.
No, but I mean, when it comes down to, am I going to nominate Dwight Henry, the one-time actor who will probably not go on to have a huge career in Hollywood, or Matthew McConaughey for the feel-good turnaround career story of the year? You know, like, there's got to be some narrative. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And Dwight Henry does have, like, some, but are they going to give two nominations to first-timers for this one movie who, you know, are essentially amateurs? I mean, they're brilliant, but these were their first movie roles. So, you know, what are they going to do from here? Have they earned their stripes? A lot of people vote based on that. I think Dwight Henry should be in. I think he should be a lock to be in. I think he should be in competition. You know, but that's a stretch. You've also got Alan Arkin for Argo out there, you know, on the periphery. I've heard Jason Clarke in Zero Dark Thirty does really, really good work. I don't know. I think everything else is pretty much a stretch. maybe John Goodman for because he had a big year. Same thing as like Matthew McConaughey. He was in like Argo. He was in Flight. You know, he's in like all of this stuff that the Academy seems to like, or that the voting bodies rather seem to like. So Flight hadn't won anything though. So maybe Flight, for people to assume that Flight was going to be in there, maybe that's premature.
Okay, Best Supporting Actress. Sally Field is winning the New York Film Critics for Lincoln. Ann Dowd is winning National Board of Review for Compliance. And Amy Adams winning the LA Film Critics for The Master. So the LA Film Critics really, really liked The Master. And Ann Dowd is... I do not even know... Who does she play in... Who's this character?
She's the boss at the fast food restaurant. This is a movie that I hated, by the way.
Okay.
I don't dislike her. You know, she does what she can. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But
you don't think it's worthy of a nomination or a win?
A win, no. If enough people like the movie, then sure, maybe. I mean... You're looking at Anne Hathaway, Sally Field, Helen Hunt, and Amy Adams. So there's one spot left. You know, it could, in theory, go to Anne Dowd, maybe, if enough people really like it. There's a couple of girls from Les Mis that could slide in there, you know, in addition to Anne Hathaway. Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, Maggie Smith.
I'm checking the list of movies that I've seen this year to see if I could see anything that's worthy of being... nominated. Anything from okay, so I guess that might wrap it up, but I actually have a couple questions, a couple movies that I want to quiz you about and whether you think they have any chance because they didn't win anything here.
Okay.
What do you think about Seven Psychopaths? Any chance of any nominations there?
None. Pretty much none. I mean, best original screenplay would be a massive stretch, sadly. It's one
Prometheus?
Of my favorites of the year. I would love it. Prometheus, even Prometheus is a stretch. I mean, maybe something, maybe like visual effects or sound, mm-hmm. you know, because it looks great, but certainly nothing above the line.
All right, Dark Knight, supporting actors there, anything?
Definitely no acting things. I mean, maybe like a... if the category expands to like 8 or 9 movies for Best Picture, I mean, we're seeing Dark Knight Rises pop up on things like the AFI list. Mm-hmm. I think it was on the National Board of Review.
Mm-hmm.
So it's lurking around. Do I think it's going to make it? No. But, I mean, maybe for Best Picture. Only if the category stretches to 9 or 10 movies, though.
Okay.
I don't believe.
Two more, I guess. Oh, well, sure. A couple more. Moonrise Kingdom. Supporting actress?
No. No acting awards. But, again, maybe picture, director. I feel like original screenplay is probably a sure thing.
Mm-hmm.
It will get at least that nomination. Maybe some things like cinematography or editing or no, probably not editing this year. It's not eligible for best original score. They just announced.
Yeah,
today.
They play a lot of pretty dumb music, I guess.
Yeah. So.
And then how about Cosmopolis and maybe Looper?
Cosmopolis, no, sadly. For me, not sadly for you.
Not sadly for me.
Looper, it just won a best original screenplay from, I think, the New York Film Critics. It's still out there. It's got some heat. It could get a screenplay nomination. I see that as a possibility.
That's good. I'd like to see that get nominated. You think Skyfall has a chance of winning anything? It's doing big box office numbers right now.
I think it definitely has a very, very good chance of being nominated for things like cinematography, for production design. You know, those below the line categories are Skyfall's bread and butter. I mean, it could definitely pull multiple nominations. I'd be surprised if it didn't, frankly.
All right, let's see. And I'm looking at... the National Board of Review's top 10 films in no particular order. And they have, what is it, Argo, Beast of the Southern Wild, Django Unchained, Les Mis, Lincoln, Looper, Perks of Being a Wallflower. Oh, yeah, how about that one? What have you heard? Anything for that one?
again, you'd have to pray for an adapted screenplay nomination, and that's just a crowded category. So it's hard to imagine. I would love for it to happen. I'm not overly optimistic.
Okay. I'm just looking to see if I can find any other things. Russell, what's your? Have you seen any documentaries this year? Or have you seen this Central Park 5 documentary?
I have not seen that. I saw. I did see The Imposter. I really, really liked The Imposter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've got a couple. There are a couple on Netflix. I'm gonna try and catch them there. But yeah, I'm just not really up on the documentaries, I'm afraid. I usually only get to a couple of them per year. Although now that I live in LA, it'll be a lot easier. But normally it was just because of, you know, restriction. Not many made it out of New York and LA, sadly. So yeah, I mean, I'll try and get around to a couple more of them. It'd be a lot easier if anybody with screeners could send me some. Wink, wink.
Yeah, I wish I could get those too. Otherwise, I got to traipse all the way over to the, all the way downtown to go to the indie theaters to go see movies now.
The really nice people at Indomina, who put out Holy Motors and The Imposter, they did respond to my request for screeners and hooked a man up. So I'm very, very happy about them. Thank you. Muchos, muchos gracias to them.
That's nice. I think that's pretty much it for the big three: the New York Film Critics, the LA Film Critics, and the National Board. So I think that it's been a pretty good year for films. I think it's actually been a pretty great year for films this year. I think there's pretty much been at least one really good movie that's come out. One or two really great movies that have come out this year, each month, from movies that are not going to get nominated, such as 21 Jump Street to probably Paranorman to Bernie to Chronicle, The Gray. There's just a lot. This has been a really enjoyable film year so far for me. So I don't know if it's made as much money as last year, and it's not really a big deal to me, but I gotta say, there's at least been one or two movies every month that I could say, I like that movie. And it succeeded at what it does. You know, you've got Premium Rush, Abe Lincoln Vampire Hunter, Cabin in the Woods, Brave. I liked John Carter of Mars. Screw you who doesn't like it. It's been. What did you think of this year, Russell?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's not over. I mean, we got a lot of stuff coming up, which actually I'll get to in just a second. But I think I was just having this argument on OK Player where people were saying it hasn't been a good year. And I just went through month by month and said there was at least one thing that I thought was really, really great every month, with the exception of July. It wasn't a good summer, I think, for big blockbuster studio summer movies, with the exception of The Avengers. I might even say Prometheus. I've warmed to Prometheus a little bit. But pretty much everything else studio-wise this summer was kind of a flop in my book. There have been a lot of really strong movies this year. I've really, really enjoyed it. And this year, we've got a lot more movies. Hold on, let me restate that. I was pulling up Twitter and trying to segue while pulling it up, and then I realized I was sounding very stupid. We've got a bunch more movies coming out this winter, this December, before the new year. We asked on Twitter what were people looking forward to the most for the rest of the year. So let's go ahead and read those. We've got my most anticipated. I don't understand what that means. The first person, I had no idea what it means. At Cassius614, Meryl Fetterman, she says, Les Mis, nothing comes close. Okay, Django comes close, but Les Mis. So thank you, Merrill. Scott Pollard, who is the basketball player? No, I don't think it's the basketball player. at J Scott Pollard, Django Unchained or The Hobbit, but both have trailers that have me worried. Slanty face. What do I call that? Slanty face makes it sound racist. What is it called when the mouth is the slash?
Uncertain.
Uncertain face. Okay. At the real Sadeg with Justin Sadeg, Sadegh. How would I say that?
I'm not sure.
I know what I'm asking you. You put an L at the end of Convention A. Wallace every time you say it.
Sadego.
Yeah, Sadel. Yeah. Django is my most anticipated of 2012, so it wins December for me by default. At Dilgio, Dylan Giovanetto, Django Unchained, I'm a sucker for the QT. Quentin Tarantino, he means, not like a QT. What are you thinking about Django, Layton? What's your excitement level?
I liked Inglourious Basterds, so I will probably enjoy the visceral, you know, the look of this movie. I don't know if I'll like the story of this movie, but I'll like the look of this movie.
Any
and there are probably one or two good dialogue scenes in this movie too. So, but I'm not overly hyped for this movie.
Somebody's hyped. They had a heart attack because they were so excited. Layton clearly just muted so that we wouldn't have to listen to that to that ambulance anymore. Layton, any trepidation about the content and the reports that the N-word use is liberal and that certainly the recreation of certain activities during slave time seems to have been... very viscerally recreated.
This is really the first time I'm hearing. Well, I knew about the N-word thing, but the visceral creation of certain scenes kind of has me kind of worried now that people might actually enjoy that a little bit too much. So,
well, I mean, there definitely seems.
I'm
going to
go in there with a cautious eye. Then
there definitely seems to be in the trailer, like, you know, two sort of like oiled up, like, muscly black figures, like, fighting each other, like, for Leonardo DiCaprio's enjoyment. You know, so, I mean, things like that. I don't know. I kind of wonder whether, because people expect Tarantino to be hilarious at all times, that they're going to end up laughing at things that maybe aren't meant to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
So I do have I'll
be on my toes, then. I'll be on my toes when I see that, then.
Yeah, I have some trepidation. But I'm not a Quentin Tarantino disciple, so maybe I'm not the person to ask. At Flound of Pesh, my buddy Tyler, I need to see what the score of the game is, see whether Tyler's beating me. Tyler says Les Mis without a doubt. Chris Ferreira at CM _ Ferreira says Amour as his most excited. So thank you to everybody who responded. It looks like Django and Les Mis sort of split. Nobody said The Hobbit. Layton, are you excited about this week? And we can go ahead and segue to this week's The Gross is Right.
Da, 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 da. I'm excited to see the 48 frame per second version, which I hopefully will be able to see this Sunday when I go see it. But the tickets are available to go see it anyway. But I'm sort of excited. But I'm kind of wary that it's going to be dragged out. Because, you know, it's going to be three films. I'm kind of worried it's going to be dragged out too much. So, with that, I don't remember who won last week. Let's see what I guessed. I'm playing for keeps. I guess 7. Russell, you guessed 2. And Shira guessed 4. So, I don't know who won.
I'm gonna guess that I won. I don't think it could have possibly made...
It's not in the top 10. Oh, you're right. Hold on. Playing for keeps, 5.7.
Oh, so you did win.
I did win. Wow. Okay.
Good grief.
Skyfall back to being number 1 and Twilight dipping. Okay, so we've got this week is it just The Hobbit? Nothing else even comes close. Wow, The Hobbit, 4,000 plus theaters. I got it. I'm just going to check one thing before I take my guess.
I mean,
Russell, why don't you guess first?
All right. I'm going to go straight up and down. $95 million. I was gonna say $100 million, but then I backed off of it. 95, and I'm glad you're excited for 48 frames per second too. I'm excited too. I'm just excited that it's gonna be something that something there is going to be different. Because I was pretty hesitant that it looked like it was gonna be just another Lord of the Rings movie. You know, been there, done that. But there definitely seems to be at least one technical push forward. So I'm really excited. By the way, my boys are getting destroyed. Tyler, I hate you right now.
So for me, I think the buzz is kind of a little less, but it is 4,000 theaters. So, I mean, that's the most theaters I think this year. So I'm gonna go slightly above you. I'm gonna go 105.
105. All right then. So Layton goes 105. I go 95, and that is The Gross is Right.
Da, 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 da.
Well, since we don't have Shira, let's go ahead and skip forward to one cool thing. You got one cool thing?
Well, you know, Russell and I have been playing letterpress against each other. He's currently severely whooping my ass.
Nice.
He's figured out the strategies after I beat him once. He asked me a few questions, and now he's a prodigy. So
Yeah, I did not realize. So in this game, there are 25 tiles with letters on them. And when you place a word, I'm blue and he's red. So if I play a word, then those tiles become blue. And if he plays a word, those tiles become red. When every tile has color on it, so when all 25 tiles are colored, the game is over. And I didn't know that. I thought it was just who can bully the other person off the board. Because if you surround a tile with your own tiles, then that tile is locked and is yours. So
is looking like you're going to give me like a 25-0 here currently.
I'm doing pretty well right now. I lucked out on that last one though. So yeah, it's been fun. I'm excited. My name on it is Frank Longo. If any listeners want to play letterpress with Leighton or myself, he's Late Gordon. Yes.
Yes, yes, I am.
And I'm Frank Long.
I've been playing with I'm playing with someone I thought was you. RMH is cool, and he beat me also. Rory Holderness or something like this.
Yeah. I know Rory. We got to have him on the show at some point. He's at the Cuddly Ninja on Twitter. He's super hilarious. Everybody should follow him.
Okay. Other than that, I guess the cool thing that I saw today was the trailer for the Tom Cruise movie Oblivion, which is on iTunes trailers right now. And I gotta say, Tom Cruise getting chased in a sci-fi movie, just I'm there. I got a smile on my face, and I think everybody's gonna be there. So I'm eagerly anticipating that movie.
Pretty good. Man, I had a really good one cool thing. And I should have written it down because now it is totally vanished from my mind. I don't know, and I really don't want to just sit here and stall while I think. Here's my one cool thing. Chorizo. Chorizo is, I think I might have talked about it before on the show. It is a pizza that you make at home, and you crumble up chorizo and put it on it. So my lady and I make chorizo. She takes the casing off the chorizo. We crumble it up on there. Cheese, peppers, onions. If we want some jalapeno, put some jalapeno on there. They didn't have the chorizo that we like now that we've moved, but what we did get had jalapenos already in the chorizo. So, you know, that's a little unorthodox, but I'll survive.
From the reputation that I've heard of California, it's probably the best pizza you can have in California.
Yeah, I see what you did there. Yeah, no, I like a good homemade pizza. You go to Whole Foods, you get the dough from Whole Foods, the like freshly made dough, and then you just toss it yourself, spread it out. You can make yourself a damn fine pizza. Oh, I know what I'm going to shout out. Vons, which is a grocery chain in L.A., they have their own app where you can download all of your coupons to your your user card. So what grocery store do they have in New York where where you are, Leighton? What's like
Fairway?
Fairway. So is there like a Fairway member card or whatever that you put on your keychain or whatever?
No. They just offer really low prices.
Oh, okay. Well, like at things like Safeway and at Giant and stuff like that, you can...
Food Emporium they do, and Stop and Shop they do.
Yes. So at Bonds, what you can do is if you go online, you can put the coupons onto your account, so then when you scan your card, it already knows what coupons, like what discounts to give you. It's internet-only coupons that give you like crazy low deals.
I got
$10 worth of turkey for $5, and you know, I think we bought $140 worth of food for $90.
That's pretty sweet.
Ain't nothing wrong with that for a struggling writer in Los Angeles. So yeah, excellent. I think this is a pretty good stopping point, don't you?
Nice fireside chat between the two of us.
Yeah, good fireside chat. Uh huh. Who's FDR and who's the cousin giving him a hand job?
It's funny.
We'll let the listeners decide. You can hashtag long and late hand job. that's the official hashtag of the episode. So, Leighton, go ahead and give us your plugs. Where can the Laters, a.k.a. the Screaming Legion of Fans, find you?
So on Twitter, it's LateGordon. LateGordon.blogspot.com. On iOS, you can LateGordon. Same thing on Letterboxd.
Yeah, you can find me, Frank Longo, on Twitter for jokes. Also, Russell H. Film for movie talk. Right now, I'm about to just do a giant rant against these Houston Texans. They're letting me down. Tyler, if you're listening to this and somehow I've won, I hope you're reveling in the fact that I suffered so greatly for so long, even if I did win. Really, I just wanted to – I want the bleeding to stop. I'm also Russell H. Film on Letterboxd. I've got it all the way up to date, fully up to date. I wrote a column for Awards Daily talking about Holy Motors this week. Please go to awardsdaily.com. Thank you to Sasha Stone and their editor Ryan Adams for giving me the opportunity to make a case for Denise Levant and Holy Motors on their website. Hopefully Ryan, their editor, will be able to join us on this show very soon. Their podcast, Oscar Podcast, is really great. Letterpress, Frank Longo. I'll shout that out as well. My blog, the password is Swordfish. I'm almost caught up, almost up to date. We are the Long and Late Movie Show. iTunes, Long and Late Movie Show. Stitcher Radio, Long and Late Movie Show. longandlatemovieshow.tumblr.com. We've also got twitter.com/LNLMovieShow. And also, how can you forget the third wheel of this tricycle that is the Long and Late Movie Show, Shira Selkovitz? Please make it a point to go ahead and follow her. She is Shira Selko everywhere on the internet.
Especially Instagram.
Be it on Twitter or Tumblr or Instagram, where you can see pictures of her face and occasionally pictures of cloud or food or her fingernails. So yeah, please follow her there. Let's see, what else? This is a lot of plugs. We're getting a lot of plugs in here. I wanted to plug what we're going to be doing in the next couple of weeks of the show, just for the end. So we're going to talk The Hobbit next week and maybe some indie things. I'll have seen Rust and Bone by next week. We will then have two episodes in which we'll talk about all the releases that are going to be coming out. So I think the weekend after The Hobbit is Zero Dark Thirty and This Is 40 and Jack Reacher. And then for Christmas, you've got Django Unchained and Les Mis. And The Guilt Trip, we could get The Guilt Trip in there. But then we're going to try and hit our top 10 lists. What did we decide that our awards were called, Leighton?
You know, I don't remember, actually.
We got to remember what our awards show is called. We had a really, really good name for it, I think. it's clearly very important and professional. We're going to hit you with those before the end of the new year. And all of our previous guests who have been on the show. So if you're a previous guest and you're listening, or you're a guest who will be on before the end of the year, we're going to get their top 10 lists as well. And we're going to have a special bonus episode that will be them talking about their favorite movies of the year. So we've got a lot of episodes coming up before the new year. I'm really, really excited about it, and you should be as well. Leighton, anything to add before we leave?
Nothing else. Have a good week, everyone. Go see Holy Motors. Go see Middle of Nowhere.
So for Leighton Gordon, for Shira Selkovitz, for hashtag long and late handjob, for the struggling Houston Texans, for Tyler Crosby, who I will defer to his fantasy football wisdom for this week and this week alone, as my superiority clearly is stated for every other week, and for Leighton, begrudgingly, for the current success of Leighton's New York Knicks. This has been the Long and Late Movie Show. Good night, and well done, thank John.
Good night, everyone. Ice Cube's a pimp.
No,
those are balls. Those are balls.
That was adorable.
Mahalo, motherfuckers.
I will plug your butt.